Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and good morning. Good morning. This is Marcia, Dr. Cappuccino, with the Dr. Cappuccino Show, and we have a jam-packed topic today. You know, we've always had great topics, but today, this morning, we have a topic that everyone really should be interested in because, you know, living today is not easy. It doesn't come with a manual. Some say the Bible is this manual, but most people are not even looking at that. But what kind of life should all be living? You know, if you've got problems, if you have wayward children, you know, if your marriage isn't working all right, if people at your job are crazy or being crazy, I mean, oh, my God, that is just such a challenge. But what kind of life should people be living today? You know, it's heard around the globe daily that suicide victims are found in their homes and on the streets, either dead by their own hand or maybe by a young person living in the home. It appears mostly when it comes to suicide that people really no longer want to live the life that, that they have been given or the life that they had gone to school earlier or planned for. But right now it seems like they can't handle or want to handle this thing called living. Now, we have some awesome answers today, and we're going to be offering hope through words and spirits for those who may want to give life a second chance. And I want to give life a second chance. You know, my life needs a little looking at, too. So this doesn't mean that because you have a degree or you don't, you know, if you have a great job and you don't, you know, if you have a beautiful family and you don't, this thing called suicide hits on all four corners. And we have with us today, again, and we love him, Dr. Reverend Colonel William Harrison. Are you there with us, Dr. Harrison?
Yes, good morning, Dr. Ventino and the listening audience. Thank you for having me again and here coming to you from the East Coast, metropolitan area, our nation's capital.
That's very good. You know, and I love the capital. You know, so much going on there. You know what people think? Everyone is rich. And they live in D.C. So, you know, I don't know.
I wish.
But you wish? Well, that's the place everyone on the coast is trying to get to. Every time I talk to someone, they say, oh, I'm just getting here from D.C. Oh, I'm getting ready to leave for D.C. Oh, I have relatives there. So you guys must be doing something good. But whatever good you're doing, we have a problem. I just mentioned the topics is what kind of life should all be living. People are really in trouble. Every day there's someone committing suicide that people know. It used to be when you heard of someone committing suicide, it was someone that somebody else knew. It was someone that they read about in a newspaper. It was someone that they heard about on the radio. That is no longer the case. People are being touched by relatives and people living in the same homes by this thing called suicide. But many are saying, well, you know what? If that's the case, doctor, what kind of life were they living before they decided that they didn't want to live anymore? Did they have the right friends around them? Was their family a happy family? Were they happy with their job? But even if we have the answers to those questions, what kind of life should all be living? Dr. Colonel Harrison, can you kind of shed some light on that topic? What kind of life should everyone be living?
Certainly, Dr. Cappuccino. I believe everyone should be living a moral life, a life full of ethics, respect, love, admiration, adoration, peace, happiness, tranquility, and having love for one another. That's the kind of life, and with hope that they will accomplish and achieve some things in this life while we're here on Earth. So I believe in the prospering of mankind, the betterment of mankind, us encouraging one another, uplifting one another, praying for one another, interceding for one another. And with that, there'll be less chances of despair, disappointment, people becoming downtrodden, committing suicide, and so forth and so on. People that, my understanding, commit suicide and so forth is because they're either disappointed or they have a loss of hope or they feel that there is no other way out. So we have to give people hope, and the way we do that is by showing them love, because we are our brother, and I might add, sister's keeper.
Oh, my goodness. I like that. I think I'm going to use it. Yes, now you just said some things that probably are going to raise the heads of some of our listeners. You mentioned the word moral. You mentioned the word adoration. Those are words that don't ring true in the ears and eyes and hearts of most people today, because, you know, there's no moral standard anymore, especially here in America. So if we're saying that, you know, if they be moral, you know, that might help them save their life and to think about taking their life, then we may have a problem. No one is thinking about morality, morals, being moral. They're not teaching their young men, their young women to be moral people. And they're certainly not talking to them about adoration or the act of adoring another person, a god, or adoring maybe their house. That's not happening. So are you saying we've got to move people back to a moral standard? And if so, what standard would that be?
Yes, Doc, that's what I'm saying. We need to move people back to the moral standard, and the moral standard I'm referring to is the only one that I've learned in these years that I've been here on this earth. The moral standard that I'm aware of has to do with the principles upon which I understand the world was built upon, the moral standards of God. God may be called different names, Yahweh and Allah and other different names and so forth and so on, but there's only one moral standard, one truth. In fact, the founders of this nation built this nation upon Judeo-Christian principles, which goes back to the Old Testament teachings of Christians believing in one God, one faith, one baptism, the New Testament, one Lord, one faith, one baptism. Without morals, we go astray, we lose hope, we become lost, and we seek to find our own way, and every man, a woman, a child seem to think that the way they think and what they do is right. So the standard, as you said, Doc, the moral standard is gone. So America needs to turn back to the founding principles that the organizers of this country inculcated in the Declaration of Independence and in the Constitution. And it was predicated upon God.
Mm-hmm. I hear the word God. Now, here on the West Coast, and we said this before in our last segments, the churches are closing up. There's no one walking on the streets, you know, with the big bullhorn saying, come to God, come to God, come to God. You don't have people talking about, oh, I'm a Sunday school teacher. I mean, this was something 25 years ago, even 10, that people were proud of. Oh, you know, I have 500 in my Sunday school class. But if the churches are not there, if they're not open, if they're not standing as a beacon of hope anymore in most family neighborhoods, then that means that this principle of God is not being taught. So how are the young people that don't even know? I've talked to some, and they've asked me, who is Jehovah? Who's Jesus Christ? We don't go to church in our home. Is that something to do with church? I've actually confronted and talked to young people about that, not the oldsters, because, you know, they should know better. But as it appears, if God is not taught in the churches, because the church is now almost non-existent, how are people supposed to learn about this God that you say that has the pinnacle of morality in his heart? Because, of course, he said, you must be holy as I'm holy. If he's not being taught, then what is the next step?
If he's not being taught, Doc, then he has to be taught. And one tool that we can use, and I regret to hear that the churches are some of the churches are closing down on the West Coast, and troubles my spirit.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to briefly say, Doc, and respectfully I'll pause again. I want to briefly say there are online access to the Bible. There's online access to tutoring and teaching and Bible principles, and a lot of it is free. And since we live in a technological age when the millennials and others who are non-millennials are engaged in phones and all kinds of technology and social media, they can access the free Bible tutoring and training and biblical principles and all those things online, that will give them hope. So I suggest that you consider that as a resource.
Yeah, well, that's a good sounding research, but we have a problem with that. And the problem is this, that they're not being taught to be moral, and that moral means God, and that God means supernatural assistance. What is supposed to drive them to just wake up in the morning and say, oh, I think I'm going to go online, I'm going to hear about God? That's the point. If the churches are not existing for that, how do you get someone that don't know anything about God, don't want to know anything about God, don't have time to even think about doing right because some God said, you know, I got to do right? How and who is supposed to push these people toward going online? They're not going to do that. Like Philip said, how am I going to hear and learn about God unless I'm taught? How do we get people to actually wake up and say, okay, I'm going to go online, I'm going to learn about Jesus? They would already have to have some kind of a subliminal knowledge, if nothing else, about this God, and that maybe I need to go and change my life. Because when you talk about God, people normally think, oh, well, they want me to stop lying. Oh, well, they want me to stop fornicating. Oh, well, they want me to stop fighting and beating up on people. There's got to be a way, even if all this stuff is online and you're right, how do you engage someone going down the street talking about, you know, I'm going to kill myself? How do you tell them, oh, go online and Google something, and something about God's going to come up, and then that God's going to tell you not to kill yourself or to do right, be right? We still need some kind of a force or a trajectory of force to get people to say, my life is in shambles, it's crazy, I tried everything, so I think I know something about God, so I'm going to go and find out about God. I have a problem with that, because once again, you've got to get them over there online. They're not going to wake up and say, I'm going online. How do you get people that are threatening to kill themselves to all of a sudden say, oh, I'm going to go online, I'll find out about God? There's 66 books of the Bible. Some of them are long, some of them are short. How would a person know to just go online and see a book that says the Bible and then just open it up? Oh, I'm not going to kill myself. Let's kind of expand on that heavily, because suicide is very heavily here on the West Coast. And I'm sure if the God of the Bible said the whole world is lying in the power of the wicked one, it's not just Los Angeles, it's just not California, it's just not Texas, it's just not D.C. He said the whole world. So that means America and beyond. How do you get people that have given up to go online? And I'm just asking you that because you mentioned that as a source of connecting with the Bible God.
Okay, Doug, let me offer another resource. That was for the millennials, because they seem to be actively engaged in technology and social media. But let me suggest this for the millennials and non-millennials. There's the International Platform for Peace offers tents of prayer, and tents of prayer will be forthcoming soon across many states here in the country. The tents of prayer will have a prayer warrior there, or more than one prayer warrior there, and they will interact and intercede with people. They will pray for them. They will offer them encouragement, uplift them, and refer them to other resources where they can have ongoing prayer and ongoing indoctrination with respect to becoming, for lack of a better term, for being given hope, for being given hope. There's two aspects of it. One is to be given hope. The other is to come into salvation, which means deliverance from the power of sin, power and penalty of sin. But tents of prayer is a tremendous key, tremendous tool. Look for it. It's coming to various cities and so forth, near people who are listening and others. That's the interactive, that's the human personal touch that the International Platform of Peace is advocating and will be bringing forth very, very, very soon. So that will definitely work. in places where churches are closing down, in places where churches are still open. This will be an addition. It'll be community-based, and people can see, feel, and touch someone that can help uplift them through prayer, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay, I like that because, you know, the Bible God says, my house, not the Bible God, but Jesus, which he said, the Father and I are one, so we can still say that. Jesus Christ stated that his Father's house would be a house of prayer. So we're talking sense of prayer. I think our listeners can actually see the connection there. But are you saying that prayer is the answer to thousands and thousands a day committing suicide? Are you saying that this aspect of prayer, which I understand is communication with God, so are you saying talking to God through prayer will help people to see some kind of value in their lives, so they say, oh, you know, I think I'm going to live one more day. I'm not going to kill myself. I'm not going to shoot myself in the head. Is that the only solution? Because our topic is what kind of life should we be living? So I'm trying to tie in what other steps besides prayer? Because I know if I go out there and, you know, I'm running red lights and I'm running up on people trying to fight, chances are my life's going to be taken away. I don't have to worry about killing myself because I'm going to get killed if some of those things happen. But I'm wondering when you say the tense of prayer, are you advocating that as the solution for people not killing themselves? Because if you're going to pray, you first got to believe in who you're praying to. So I think we're kind of right back to where we started off. If a person is suicidal, are you saying that all he has to do is pray and then wait for some supernatural answer not to kill himself? Is there something else that go along with prayer that should involve his living?
Yes, first, a person suicidal, obviously they're in need of medical consultation, medical assistance, perhaps even even medication.
So you're talking mental health as well as medical health.
Yes, yes, yes. Mental health as well as medical health, but particularly mental health, because you have to become stable, sound mentally before they can have the proper comprehension and understanding and be open to prayer and other mediums that will help them get beyond their despair, their depression, and their feeling of helplessness. So obviously, you know, the caretakers in that mental health arena will have to be involved with those kinds of patients or people. But the other prayer works for everyone. Without regard to various denominations, there are 10 major world religions. But without regard to that, prayer works. I think universally most agree and believe in some type of prayer. They just differ in the deity that they worship, whether that deity is God or something else. But there is a supernatural being, whether one who believes in God or one who's a non-believer or atheist or agnostic. There's a God. And once one comes to understanding, tap into that resource, then they can find a relief, and they can find themselves, and they can find hope, and they can move from the despair to soundness and prosperity and so forth, Doc. That's my belief.
Gosh, that's your belief. Okay, because you have, as we said earlier, the churches are closing, so obviously those in them obviously did not pray or take advantage of the avenue of prayer, or they would not have shut down. So I think I'm hearing that you're saying if someone is suicidal, all they got to do is pray. I don't think the world at large is going to buy that. You know, I know prayer is necessary in my life, and I believe in prayer. But what does that have to do with the life that people should be living? They can pray, but it seems to me that they should be living in a certain way that would even make their prayers to God even more strengthened as to help them. Because, you know, if we have you mentioned tense of prayer. They go into the tense of prayer. They are prayed for. They get some hope, and they get this and that. But when they go home and close the door, it's a different story. Say, for instance, myself, if I want to kill myself because things aren't going well, and then I stumble on the tents of prayer and someone prayed for me. Does that necessarily mean after I'm prayed for that I'm not going to feel the same? I'm going to certainly have the same problem. I'm going to certainly have the same broken home that I came from that made me think life's not worth living. I'm going to still be faced with poverty, still be faced with no job, still be faced with the reasons that said, oh, I don't want to live anymore. Are you saying that all a person has to do is pray or go find someone to pray for them and they're going to be all right? I think that's what I'm hearing, but you're not. Are you saying there still needs to be a change in their personal life? I think we need to dwell on that. We got 10 minutes to go, so I think we need to dwell on what kind of life people should be living. We're going to pray. I know I listened to believing prayer. You are a reverend, so you know the power of prayer, but there's got to be something else that we can look at as far as a person's day-to-day living. Because I know if I'm shooting heroin up every day, ruining my heart and my veins, I might want to kill myself if I don't have a way out of that. You know, if I'm sleeping with 10 men a night and some of them are not good to me, they fight me, I probably am going to want to kill myself eventually just to get out of that. So with that being said, what else can you give the listeners as far as information on what they should be doing or could be doing in their day-to-day living that would get them and not put them on the brink of suicide? Because this thing is big. Nationwide is very big.
They have to change their relationships, associations, and socialization, Doc, in addition to prayer. Tap into positive organizations that's community-based, spiritually-based, socially-based. They got to tap into those kinds of organizations, tap into those kinds of people. They got to withdraw from the element that's causing their depression. Usually if a person is depressed, they're involved in a certain set of circumstances that has caused that. And so once they connect negative, which is negative, once they connect that negative with positive prayer, positive person who's praying for them, a positive person who's advocating for them, a positive person they can go to, they can befriend, they can socialize with, they can spend time with, they can uplift, they can encourage them, help provide some resources and all those kinds of things, in addition to ministering prayer and so forth, then we can start turning things around. Right now, the moral fiber of the country is broken down, and from the top down, no one is advocating on stability through moral principles or moral beliefs. And so there are still those, a remnant of people that believe in moral principles, moral rights, moral beliefs, that of God or Allah, Yahweh, whomever you want, the Great Spirit, whomever you want to call this supreme superior being. They got to get involved and tap into that type of environment, those kinds of people, because there is hope. The world hasn't gotten to where it is now, believed to be 6,000 years of age, simply because people lost hope. It's more profound in this generation because people have turned away from the very being, a deity that has caused their existence. And so they got to reconnect with people who still believe in that supreme deity, with prayer, with resources, with hope, with socialization, with mentoring, with encouraging, with tutoring, and that will help turn America around, help turn them around, and it'll help save our nation. That's my belief.
Well, you know what? Those are strong beliefs, and, you know, I know you're on the right track, but I want to throw out this. You know, there's a Time report, you know, the magazine Time, that has a figure, black figure on the front cover, and they got their head down almost between their legs. You know, they just look so sad. And the topic is America's loneliness. The article goes to say that people don't have time for each other. They really don't want to talk to each other. You got some people that have said, I don't talk on the phone, text me. You know, I'm not going to talk, send me an email, shoot me an email. America is facing a great loneliness. So the people that we know in our lifetime that you could get in your car and drive, you almost could walk to someone's home and get some encouragement. You had people sitting there, grandma, grandpa, if you had a problem, it wasn't even related to you. You could knock on the door, get something to eat, and tell your problems too. You had people that you could talk to. But this generation now, with all the technology, which has been good on one end, but curse it on another, people don't have time for each other. A lot of the centers that you mentioned, as far as, you know, going into social service and citing, you know, say, okay, I'm having some emotional problems, help me. It costs money to run the mental institution. It costs money to run departments of public social services. And this is what the article brought out. You don't have people that want to mentor anymore. You don't have people that want to take a young child by the hand and say, you know, if you have a problem, here's my phone number, this is where I'm at, I'm here for you. Teachers have even said that on elementary all the way to university campuses. So if America is facing this kind of loneliness, where people don't want to talk to each other, they don't want to socialize unless they're going somewhere where they can snort some cocaine, dance all night, we have a problem with that. So how much of that new realization that is put on the table going to affect anyone trying to get help with mental illness and any kind of illness? And then I'm wondering, too, if the churches are closing, shutting down, and they are, where are those people that were sitting in them? It would appear to me that they should be opening up their homes for counsel, spiritual counsel. You don't need a license for that in some states. Religious counseling, that's a different thing. But just having someone to talk to, we didn't have that problem. Now we're facing a group of people that don't even want to talk. So some are saying, and the article alluded to it, that that's part of this suicidal problem, that people are more isolated more than ever. They don't have the friendships that they need to sustain living. They do not have the family anymore, even the nuclear family. Once people get 18, they all scatter. America has some problems, and I think the only way out of that is, and you mentioned this, spiritual teaching, spirit looking into God, something above them that can help pull them out of the dirt. Now, what God that is, I know you know probably more about that than I do, but if they haven't been taught to look to God, they've been taught to look to their men or their women, their bank accounts, their big homes, if they've been taught that, and still, even with all that, they're isolated. What now? And we got 3 minutes. I want you to finish this out. What now can they do? They're isolated and they're in trouble.
The church while still is the cornerstone of communities and cornerstone of America. Those churches that have closed down, those pastors ought to be reminded of their commission and the Great Commission, Matthew 28. Go ye therefore, baptize them in the name of Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, teaching them all things, observe these principles. So that can be done within the church or outside of the church. The other thing is that the community-based organizations are available, and community-based organizations got to intercede and advocate for some of these people who need assistance and demand certain mental and other medical facilities be in their communities. People got to shut down these darn cell phones and detach themselves from them a certain portion of the day. They're interpersonal. We need personal communication, personal interaction again, so that people will know that you love them, you care for them, you're willing to uplift them and intercede for them, Doc. So we got to go back to the basic principles that we used to have that primarily work, that we have lost, and it will sustain people, it will reassure people, and it will give them hope again. But we got to return to that and back away from this technology, only use it on an as-need basis, but not a principal means of communication.
Oh, my God, we're going to pick up on this next week. I mean, so much information was put out there. You know what, listeners, we're going to do the same thing next week. We're going to get to the bottom of this issue. Dr. Reverend Colonel William Harrison, thank you so much again for being on the show. We have 44 minutes. I'm looking at the screen. Very quickly, I want you to give them one source of contact, and we will also be bringing your book next week into the show, so that you can give us a little information on this, not so much mental chaos, which we talked about today, but chaos in the land. Thank you so much again, Dr. Harrison, for being on the show. Hey, you guys, you can always call in. You can speak directly with Dr. Harrison. Thank you much. Dr. Harrison, we got 10 seconds. Give us your email address.
email address is WHARRI 1943 at AOL.com.
Thank you. See you next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.